I was in a coma for 6 weeks while the doctors told my wife I was going to die. When I woke up, she told me the most fantastic story. My team kept running the business without me. Freelancers reached out to my team and said, "We will do whatever it takes as long as Craig's in the hospital." I consider that the greatest accomplishment in my career. My name is Craig Andrews, and this is the Leaders and Legacies podcast, where we talk to leaders creating an impact beyond themselves. At the end of today's interview, I'll tell you how you can be the next leader featured on this show. Today, I want to welcome Michael Cole. He is the president of Next Level Technician. Michael went from being a franchise owner that went kind of in a shaky way and decided to start a staffing and training company for the trades, a greatly needed area. And he thinks the trades are overlooked and there's not enough training for that. So he set out to fix that. And then COVID hit. So this is going to be a neat discussion. Michael, welcome.
Hey, what's going on, Craig? Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So you grew up in North Carolina.
I did, a small town called Hickory, North Carolina.
I've been there. I've been to the factory that made my dining chairs.
Furniture capital of the world.
Yeah. And my dining table was made in Morganton. And they went out of business, I think, back around 2009. And I think one of the things that's really sad is amazing furniture used to be made in North Carolina, you know, Piedmont and the mountains, and just disappeared.
Yeah. There's still a few holding on shop. And surprisingly enough, Hickory, North Carolina also had a booming copper cabling, fiber optics, which is kind of goes hand in hand with what I do now too, surprisingly enough. But yeah, at one point in time, that between the manufacturing of that and furniture, it was a hot spot to be.
It's really sad. And it's really sad because the furniture I've made, you know, I bought years ago. My dining table, I bought in 99. Yeah, so 20, I've had it for about 25 years. And it's the type of thing I expect to stay in my family 2-3 generations.
My bedroom furniture from high school, my daughter has still, that we bought in Hickory, North Carolina.
Yeah. You know, and there's been a loss. We focused on college so much for so many years. The trades got neglected, and then we let the Chinese just kind of kick our butts on furniture, which is sad. And it just feels like there's a lot of skills that have been lost over time.
Yeah, and unfortunately with technology, we're going to continue to lose some of these skill sets.
Yeah. So you decide to do that. So first off, tell me about Subway. You had a Subway franchise.
Yep, had a Subway franchise, had a business partner at the time. It was interesting. I worked a full-time job. It was my first taste of ever owning a business. My wife helped run it, and we bought essentially a beaten down store that a previous owner was getting kicked out of, which oddly enough, that can happen, but you have to piss off a lot of people. So we got that store really for next to nothing almost, had a business partner. Our plan was to grow and then for me to eventually buy him out. Things went a little south when we went to go look at getting our second store. So long story short, a lot of ugliness that came out of that when you have partnerships and things go south. So we decided to obviously sell the original store we had. So back to the original owner, which was a whole nother fiasco. It was just an interesting way things worked. And then a week later is when the Jared scandal broke. Like literally, we transferred paper to the store. This Jared scandal broke. Subway sales across the board, across the country, went down 30%.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Oh, that had to be like a kick in the gut when you saw that news break.
It was, but also it was a blessing in disguise because here I was going through this legal battle with someone that was kind of a mentor to me that I thought was a mentor towards me. And it just ended so ugly to then see that happen and sales go down 30%. You know, I am a firm believer that sometimes things just happen for a reason and what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. So to see that happen was like, okay, that was tough, but thank God I did get out because we would have been struggling. We were still a small operation.
Yeah. And so, first off, let me back up. Kind of high level, what do you do? What do you do for
Yes.
businesses?
Yep. So Next Level Technician, we are a very niche staffing and training company that only focuses on low voltage. So think structured cabling, fiber optics, security systems, audio visual, and fire alarm.
Okay. And you staff technicians
Yep.
or
So we do everything. So we'll staff from a green technician that knows nothing about the industry and we'll try to help provide some training. Some of our clients just prefer to have some greener folks to come in because they don't have as many bad habits and they can train them the way they want them. And we'll go all the way up to lead level, project management. We've even done some sales folks as well.
well, you know, it's funny. We were talking about that in the green room. The biggest HVAC company in Charlotte made that decision years ago that they would never hire anybody who had ever worked for one of their competitors. And it was for the bad habits. They felt like they could have better quality service by bringing in people, putting them through their own training.
Yeah, and I think a lot of businesses make that mistake. I mean, I made it back when we had the Subway, and I've even made it when here at Next Level, where we hired people that had experience because they either worked at another Subway or in a similar industry role, like at Next Level as a recruiter. And either they come with a lot of bad habits with the, well, we used to do it this way at this place, or also like you end up taking somebody from your competition. It's not always a good look at the back end of it. It can cause other issues out in the marketplace. And so when you get that reputation of like, I want to steal other people's folks, it's not a good look either, you know? So there's two sides to it. One, the bad habit side that you could get. The other side is the reputation it could have on your business.
Yeah. Well, here's something that's kind of funny on a much bigger scale. The guy who is currently running Google's organic search team was the guy who was in charge of Yahoo. Yahoo's search engine went and failed, but he has experience.
Yeah. And that one, if it fails, that's a whole different story, you know? Then I think it's free game.
But all of his experience is on driving one of the world's leading search engines into the dirt.
Yeah, well.
And I think he's done some of the, I think he's brought some of his magic to Google because
Yeah.
I think Google's broken right now.
Yeah.
So anyway, you were telling me, so at some point you decided, hey, we're just going to do this kind of staffing thing and we're going to train people. And you did what a lot of entrepreneurs do. You're like, hey, this seems to be a need. Let me go do it. I'll do the research later on what it takes.
Yeah, and I still live by that motto, figure it out along the way. So I worked for a distribution company. They were a great company to work for, and I was selling all the products that our technicians install on a regular basis. So every day, phone calls would be, hey, if you hear of any technicians looking for work, send them my way, send them my way. And I mean, this was a regular, almost everyday occurrence where people were calling about needing folks. So I said, man, I can figure this out. I got this. So it didn't quite click though. I was doing some volunteer work at a youth home until a kid that kind of I felt like didn't have a lot of opportunities once he was going to be asked to leave this home at the age of 18, 19 years old. And I was just driving home, kind of just like, man, what there's got to be some better options for kids that don't want to take the traditional college path. Maybe they don't even have the opportunity for that path. You know, a lot of people fall victim to their circumstances, but there's always a way out. You just need other people in your life to kind of point you in those directions. So I was driving home after volunteering and it just hit me. I'm like, this is it. I can work with organizations like this. I can work with local high schools. I can do all these things to do a training. And then it hit that I don't know how to do a training. I've never done this. I don't want to install this. I'm not a contractor. I sell the product. I know a lot about the product, but couldn't tell you like the intricacies of how it works and how to install it. So I called a buddy of mine named Jeff and I said, hey man, I've got this idea. Do you want to help out? And he was all about it.
Yeah. So how did it go? So you guys set up this training. What happened?
It was terrible. So we hit up just about every local agency you could think of. So from at-risk youth to local government agencies, local high schools. So I went about on a month bender of just beating up everybody I could, putting flyers out, word of mouth, putting it even in local community colleges, like on their bulletin boards, just trying to get anything I could. We got about 10 people for the first class. We made it 2 weeks long because I had to do it after hours because I was still working a full-time job. Terrible. Terrible, man. We had a good training system in place, but we didn't think about, are you scared of heights? Have you ever used basic hand tools? Just simple things that you just assumed anybody that was going to take this class would be okay with. Only to find out after getting into the class, we had one kid go up half a ladder and just a six, like not even a tall ladder, and just white knuckled it like after two steps. And I was like, ooh, we didn't think about this at all. So out of that first class of 2 weeks, we started with 10. After the first week, I think we were down to eight. After the second week, I had to let a couple people go just because they weren't picking up. So we finished the class with three people. And out of those three people, only one person passed their drug test. Yeah.
Holy cow, it's like, wow. So, a couple of thoughts. One, the ladders are surprising. So, I used to live in Greensboro
Okay.
and I had a single story, but it had a vaulted ceiling in the back of the house, and it was a little bit off the ground there. And I remember going up to change, I had a spotlight up there. Oh my goodness, it gave, I mean, I've rappelled and I've, done things like that, but I start going up that ladder and the ladder's a little rickety and what have you. It gave me the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah, and I mean, think about some of our guys go on boom lifts that are the really narrow ones that up and outside, and if a little bit of breeze hits, I mean, that thing's swaying. It's if you're not scared of heights, not all of our job sites require that, and not all the trade with even within what we do require that, but it's definitely part of it. You're going to be on a ladder at some point in time.
Yeah. How do you screen for that now?
Oh man, we've come a long way. So that was back early 2018. I will say though, out of that class, we did successfully pass the one guy. He worked for us for a long time. He actually got hired on full time by the client he went out with. So that was a huge success, which is a whole nother story because I didn't even know what staffing was, even when we were doing the training. I thought maybe I would just get paid like a one-off fee for this person. But yeah, so after that class, we learned, right? As anyone does, you kind of got to just put your product out to the world and hope for the best. And even at this time, I wasn't expecting this to be a full-time gig ever. I didn't expect it to take off now, like where we're at. But we just kept using every training class we did to kind of vet, okay, based on that, now as we advertise and we talk to people, hey, these are the things. If you're interested in working with your hands, if you've worked with your hands in the past, have you? And then once they've showed interest, we hit them with the qualifications like, are you scared of heights? Are you colorblind? Is another one that we didn't think about. So there's a lot of things within the trades. Just about anything can be taught. That's what I love about the trades. Any of this is, it's not rocket science. Any trade can be taught. But you have to have the aptitude to learn. And then there are some actual genetic attributes that could go against you.
Yeah, and why does the colorblind matter?
So we work with, it's called the color code. So when you're punching down jacks and even fiber optic cables, they all have different strand colors. And you have to be able to see the right color to make sure you're making your connection correctly.
I went through avionics school in the Marine Corps, and that was a quick way to get booted out was if you were, well, you'd never get in if you were colorblind.
Yeah. So we've actually had, I've talked to two people that have had successful careers colorblind doing this, but the only reason we found out about it is because once again on our next class we had someone that was colorblind and they weren't doing their terminations correctly. And I was like, something's not right. Like this kid's sharp, he gets it. And finally we're like, this isn't working. He was like, well, yeah, that color right there is green. And we're like, no, it's not, it's blue. And then it hit. And then I was like, oh, well, let's add that to the list to ask about.
Wow. So what was your second class like? So first class, you start with 10,
Yeah.
finish with three, only one passes a drug test.
Yes. So second class was similar in size because we found that like anything over 10 was just going to be too many people for our training. And we actually said, screw this 2 week nonsense. Let's shorten it. We actually went to 2 full days. We did a Friday, Saturday. I just took PTO from my other job and then gave up a little bit of my weekend time. And we found it was a lot better too because throughout 2 weeks, and if you're only doing an hour at a time, like people attention span kind of gets lost. And these are very basic, minimal skills they needed anyway. So rock it out in 2 days and then try to get them a job as fast as possible was kind of the goal there. And that class was good. I think we had 10 people and only 7 actually showed up, which is common now. So that class was pretty good. I think we got 5 out to work after that one. But what was really interesting is after that class, what happened next was I started getting phone calls and emails because I started really small just in Charlotte, North Carolina. I started just getting phone calls and emails like, hey, these techs are working out well. This is great. Glad we could use you. But now I need people with way more experience, like things that you won't be able to train them on. So can you just go find me those people too? Wow. And I was like, oh, wait. I was like, I might be able to make some money doing this, you know, because this was just supposed to be side hustle fun, trying to get kids involved and, you know, give other avenues for folks. And then it kind of hit me like, oh, I might be onto something here.
Yeah. So when you place somebody, you know, the traditional staffing model is, or headhunting model is like a 20 or 30% of the first year's compensation.
Yep.
Where are you falling? Are you at like 20 or are you at 30?
Yeah, so we're somewhere between 15 and 20, depending. And we've got some really cool, unique ways that we break up that chunk. So the problem with traditional staffing, and it's kind of gotten a black eye in the trades, right? Because the approach I took too, because I, you know, you model off what you know and what you've seen until you know better, right? And so we were going down the traditional route, which, by the way, on our first class, I had no clue what staffing even meant. Like I said, I just wanted a finder's fee, like $300 for training somebody was what I was trying to get. And my buddy Jeff was like, no, this is staffing now. You need to go get workman's comp and like all this stuff. And he kind of showed me the ins and outs of like what was needed. And so I got all that real quick because then he wanted to hire him. And I was like, oh, okay, I get paid an hourly rate on this guy. Like, this is great. And so what I learned though from traditional staffing is they have recruiters just banging the phone all day. And they're finding people, you know, from an hourly rate, putting their bill rate on it and just hoping they show up on day one on the site. A lot of times the clients aren't meeting them. They're not seeing them. They're not doing anything. And we did that for about 6 months or so once I hired some people finally as this took off. And it's a terrible model because you're hoping someone shows up. So we went to video calls about 4 years ago now, and no one in our industry is doing this currently the way we do it, or at all for what I know. And so we started recording video interviews. We lost about 40% of our applicants because now we interview them twice. We do a phone screen, video screen, and then we ask our clients to interview them. And it's been a game changer. And so our model has evolved both from how we screen the techs to also that helps us figure out like, what are they really worth? Because that's the next thing. Obviously, if you're a staffing company, you want to get them paid the most money possible. So your margins go up, right? Either a higher contract fee for a direct hire or a higher percentage on a contract to hire. So we really try to get them in the ballpark of what their pay rate should be based on their skill set. And then we try to use a good margin markup based on territories and where we should be. But we're not the cheapest, that's for sure, because of the vetting we have to do up front.
Yeah. Do you drug test on the front end?
So what we do is we drug and background check everybody, but we don't do that until we get the green light. So like if I sent you a candidate and you're like, I'm really interested, I want to bring him on, I want him to start Monday or her to start Monday, we'll drug and background check at that time and let you know like, hey, pending this coming back, we can start on Monday just because it's such a cost and we would be drug and background check. We'd be wasting money left and right.
Yeah. 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 And it's, I have a buddy out in the Denver area who does drug testing, you know, and he works with companies that have drivers with CDL.
Okay. Yeah.
And if there's ever an instant, he has to be on the scene, do a drug test. And it's expensive. I mean, heck, for him to do, now he's doing like emergency service drug tests, but for him to get in the car and go to a scene and do a drug test, that's $200-$400.
Yeah, it racks up. And luckily for us, we do like 10 panels, like really quick, rapid. The background checks are what's rough. I mean, we ask everybody, can you pass a pre-employment drug and background screen, right? And they all say yes for the most part. Few people actually tell the truth. And it's funny, the ones that actually are like, oh yeah, hey, by the way, I got a little bit of trouble. I had a misdemeanor. The ones that actually own up to it, you'd be amazed that they actually get placed. Like clients and us personally, like, we would rather you be upfront and tell the truth, because what happens is if you say you can, we run your background and you have something, then you lie. Like, you knew about that. Like, there's no way you didn't know you had a charge on your record from a year ago, or even a pending charge, you know? And so we try to, like, have that talk with people, but you'd be amazed. And then now with marijuana becoming legal in certain states, there's some blurred lines about, you know, what you can and can't allow. And so it's just the drug and background world has been a huge kind of culture shock for me, and something that we actually preach now when we get to talk to younger generations about the trades. It's like, one mistake will follow you your life.
Yeah. But I like what you said about coming clean, because I believe we're a society that believes in giving people second chances. And we all have something in our background. I mean, I should have a record. I mean, heck, one time, this was before I went in the Marines, my brother and I went down to the beach. We were walking down the boardwalk with little cups of beer, and a cop has me by my arm and is taking me back to the cruiser. I'm getting ready to be booked for underage drinking, drinking in public, all sorts of crap. I yanked my arm out of his hand and start running and got away from him. I mean, had I been a slower runner,
Well,
I'd have a record.
I always say that usually the only difference between someone with a record and someone without a record is they got caught.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone's got a past, so.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, it's such an important point. In creating that environment where you can say, hey, look, nobody's perfect. Come clean. You know, come clean. And yeah, just kind of in dealing with customers, this is kind of where it gets in my world. I mean, guess what? We're my agency, we're imperfect. We make mistakes. And it always works out best when we're the one that goes to the client first and tell them. And don't make a bunch of BS excuses. Just say, hey, we screwed up. Here's what happened. Here's what we're doing to fix it.
Yeah, and that's what I tell my team that all the time. Like, we're human. We're gonna make mistakes. The thing is, the faster you own it and come with solutions, generally speaking, 9 out of 10 times you're fine.
Yeah.
Own
Yeah.
it and move on.
Oh, I had an incident years ago where we had a project. It was a website project. And we usually don't do website projects. You know, we don't build them. We have somebody that works. You know, we have a sub that builds them. We architect them, the kind of the information structure. And this had a special API that was supposed to interface with HubSpot. And we launch it, it goes live, and it breaks. And I call my web guy. I'm like, hey, this is broken. Can you fix it? And he fixes it. And then a few weeks, I tell the client, all right, it's fixed. 2, 3 weeks later, breaks again. Go through the same routine, breaks a third time. And so we're finally at the point where it's like no mystery. I mean, I'm like furious. And I had to find out. I figured out why this kept happening. That's a different story. But I walked into the client's office and said, "Hey, I want to give you a quick presentation." The first slide, in the biggest font I could possibly fit on that slide, was, "We screwed up." I mean, this had been dragging on for a couple months. I'm embarrassed. And by the end of the meeting, the client's smiling and is thankful, happy to work with me. But the first slide, real simple, we screwed up.
Yeah, and this is one of the toughest parts about the industry we're in, is that when we screw up, we can generally fix just about anything we screw up, right? And so we'll own it and we'll come with suggestions. The hardest part about this is we are working with such an unpredictable product now that in our world, there are certain times that, like, we can't fix some of it, and we didn't screw up. In fact, we did everything we possibly could to get someone to the job site, have them show up. I mean, we've paid for people's gas and tools and everything else you could think of to get them to the job site, and they still don't show up. And that's a tough one. And our clients now know that's part of the nature of the beast, right? Like, there's a reason why staffing exists in the trades, because it's hard to find good people. So they'd rather us risk it and hope for the best, and they have to do all the homework and back end and drug and background and do all that on their own heavy lifting. So that has been the one part about this career path that has really been a hard pill to swallow at times because I pride myself on my work. Like, if
Yeah.
I mess up, I'm going to own it. If you give me an opportunity, I'm going to give it everything I have. But when you're relying on other people to show up and show out, it's hard. So we've just changed our motto to, you can lead a horse to water, you can't make him drink. So as long as we do everything in our control, if they don't do it on their end, then we did our job.
Yeah, how do you manage that emotionally? Because that's hard for me. I mean, when I, yeah, because I have my standard for where I work, and I think any leader probably has a higher standard than their team can keep up with. But when there's such a gap, it's how do you manage that emotionally?
It's tough to be honest with you. It doesn't get easier. Like, it's never something that I've been able to adjust to. And I think our team at times gets pretty beat down. 'Cause I mean, we've had instances where one person doesn't show up, we backfill them, they don't show up. I mean, we've had it where it's happened 3 times for whatever rhyme or reason. And it's just like, it almost just feels like it's not meant to be. You know, like just everything that we worked our butts off to make this happen, fix it again. And then these people don't show up. So it's hard. And so what I try to do is just remind my team, like, it is not your fault. Like, if you've done everything you can possibly do, it is not your fault. And we try to keep things lively with Teams messages and things like that. I've even gone out of my way to be like, take the rest of the day off. Like, today's just not your day. Like, you know, luck will find you tomorrow, maybe. Because it is. It's a grind. Like, my team works their butts off for an unpredictable product. And they could say all the right things, do all the right things. The candidate could say and do all the right things. Come Monday morning, they call, text. We've even had it where we call them Monday morning. Hey, you on the way to the job site? Yep, I'll be there in 20 minutes, whatever. They don't show up. And we're like, what happened? Like, did you vanish off the face of the planet? And then they do. They don't call us back. They don't text us. We have no clue what happened to them. We'll call their emergency contacts. So it's a grind and it doesn't get easier. And that's why when I interview people to come work here, I make sure they understand that part. 'Cause to me, that's the worst part about staffing is just you can do everything in your power and it could still go horribly wrong.
Yeah. Well, I mean, heck, I was telling you in the green room, I have some painters working on the house, and they told me yesterday, they said for yesterday, oh yeah, we'll be there around 8 a.m. And I knew not to expect that. My brain recalibrated. I was like, okay, that means 9. They show up a 10:45. And so yesterday I was like, hey, what time are you coming tomorrow? Oh, we'll be there around 8 a.m. It's 9:45 and they're not here. And it's, you're right. I mean, there's an unpredictability. How do your clients manage? I mean, let me ask it this way. Do the people that make it through your program, do they own a watch and do they actually keep track of time, or is that something that
Maybe that should be a qualification question we ask from now on. Yeah, I mean, I always joked, like, I wish I could make like shock collars for human beings. Just like it doesn't stop beeping until you get to the job site, you know? But yeah, I mean, at some point too, you have to treat everybody like adults, right? And so this is where I think staffing's got a black eye, because a lot of times companies similar to ours will just keep giving people chances. Like, oh, that didn't work out. Let's get them over here. Maybe it'll work out. Maybe. And so you send one bad candidate to 10, 15 different companies, and it just starts getting. So we keep a very robust CRM with notes, and we keep them very accurate. So if someone does us wrong, we don't allow second chances. You know, we try to give second chances to people that maybe have a slight record, or maybe, you know, they were late to an interview, whatever. We can have those conversations openly and honestly. But the second that you stop doing what you said you were going to do, we end that relationship. It's just that cut and dry.
Yeah.
Because we are all adults here. We all have jobs to do. And there's people out there that are wanting to do it and willing to do it. And that's where us trying to get more green people back in the industry is what we really want to focus on. We're getting ready to launch a virtual training, which I've been against because I think hands-on is the way to go. But we're going to have a really cool platform, and we're hoping to roll by the end of this month, where we just did this in Virginia. We had Eight people out of the eight people, we got five placed because they went through a week-long training. This is going to be more virtual, more like a two-day training, but jam-packed with information. They're going to have hands-on exercises. It's going to be awesome. And there's just a huge market of people out there that want to get into our industry. And we found that those people generally show up a lot more because they want to get in and learn. And where they take their career from there is up to them. And we try to roadmap that for them as best as possible. But we got to find some fresh blood, some new people to come in the industry to try to revamp it. We got a lot of retreads.
Yeah. Well, Michael, this has been fascinating. And I mean, you're definitely tackling a tough problem. I love the way you put it, the unpredictable product. And how can folks reach you?
Yeah, and the best way, if you wanted to reach out to me direct, is LinkedIn. But anything you want to learn about our company is our website, just nextleveltechnician.com.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on Leaders and Legacies.
Thanks, Greg. Talk to you soon.
This is Craig Andrews. I want to thank you for listening to the Leaders and Legacies podcast. We're looking for leaders to share how they're making impact beyond themselves. If that's you, please go to alliesforme.com/guest and sign up there. If you got something out of this interview, we would love you to share this episode on social media. Just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on the socials. If you know someone who would be a great guest, tag them on social media and let them know about the show, including the hashtag Leaders and Legacies. I love seeing your posts and suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss anything, please go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show. And it means a lot to me. It means a lot to my team. If you want to know more, please go to alliesforme.com or follow me on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.